new generations of vermin, and so the cycle had continued through endless years of torment. The white, tattered, oozing tapestry of flesh now wrapped around the pillar of the realm gate. It flowed down the steps of the portal's dais, quivering and malodorous, spreading hideous life over the dead ground. Time meant nothing. There was only the endless, racking agony of disease gnawing his bones, the delirious swim of fever, and the gurgling of his breath. Until now, a storm had come. A storm so fierce, so strong, so utterly opposed to the world of plague that he could not help but see it. The poor remains of his identity, the core that still held on to his name, reached out through rheumy eyes to the lightning. It was so clean. It was something that could purge the land of its foul life. After the lightning came a moving darkness. With his damaged sight, Erlik at first perceived only a cloud sweeping towards the maggotkin. As the cloud grew closer, he saw that it was an army. The shapes in it were dark, grim as the land to which they had come, but noble in bearing and movement. Erlik's cankered, trembling lips formed his first smile, since chaos had swept over the land he had sworn to defend. Those shapes did not bring life. They brought something better and more precious. They brought hope. The first wave of dark warriors arrived on wings of searing light. They flew over the ranks of flies and filth, javelins and hammers, as blinding as the wings streaking into the rot-bringers. Bloated, fetid bodies burst asunder and burned to ash. Hails of arrows flew in answer to the attack, but they glanced off black armour. In Erlik's eyes, it was as if the sky had given form to judgment. As the rot-bringers swarmed in confusion and died, and the three lords of the maggotkin horde struggled to hold the lines, Erlik began to laugh. He laughed some more when Fleiswil mounted the dais and took up a position in front of the realm gate, brandishing his putrid staff as if the powers he commanded could truly combat what was coming. Then in the distance, Erlik saw true glory, a warrior mounted on a majestic reptilian beast that seared the foe with lightning from its maw. And when this warrior charged through the centre of the maggotkin hordes, Erlik turned to Fleiswil and forced his blistered, swollen tongue to form words.
"Rejoice!"
he screamed between the clanging of the monstrous bell.
"Rejoice! Rejoice!"
The charge by Lord Celestant Venthor Warfire of the Anvils of the Heldenhammer hit the Children of the Bell with the force of an axe striking a rotten log. Mounted on the Drakoth Felkreth, Venthor led the paladin retinues in a blow designed to cut the enemy in half and shatter its spine. Venthor was the embodiment of a storm. His armour was as black as if carved from thunder itself, and Velkreth's lightning crackled around him. And more than anything else, he was the fury of a storm. On this day, Lord Relictor Rasan Darkseid thought, there was even more fury than she was used to seeing in Venthor.
"The Lord Celestan's wrath is mighty,"
said Lord Castellant Arvax Grimtower.
"It serves him and us well," said Rasan.
"You noticed it too?" Rasan and Arvax stood atop an outcrop of rock, watching the battle closely as Venthor's will shaped the war. They were holding positions at the rear of the battlefield for the moment, waiting for Venthor's charge to have its full effect. Further back, the Judicators, under the command of Lord Veritant Hyrea Graveson, launched endless volleys of skybolt arrows into the foe, striking the maggotkin first to the rear, then in the midst of the horde, and then near the realm gate itself, sowing confusion with searing attacks that seemed to fall from everywhere. The enemy was in disarray. The plague warriors still outnumbered the anvils of the Heldenhammer, but there was no coherence to their charges. They did not understand how to fight back. They understood even less that they had already lost. The Maggotkin occupied a wide, barren plain. The Realm Gate stood midway between the base of the western chain of the Stonepane Mountains and the city of Shadowvel. As Sigmar's lightning had announced the arrival of the anvils on the eastern edge of the plain, the foe had abandoned Shadowvel and surged eastwards to protect the gate, as Venthor intended. The prosecutors hit first, striking directly at the Realm Gate, turning the focus of the commanders inwards. Now Venthor's hammer blow sent the diseased legions reeling. They would regroup, though. No force of chaos was to be underestimated. Rassan was holding back with Arvax, Hyrea, and the main body of the liberators and judicators for that moment. When Nurgle's warlords thought they knew what they must do, that was when they would be doomed. The ragged edges of the Maggotkin horde attempted disorganized attacks against the lines of liberators standing with shields locked together. They formed a fortress wall, but their posture was not truly defensive. They were a trap waiting to spring. They struck back at the Rotbringers, lunging forwards with hammer and sword, cutting enemy warriors in half and pulverizing skulls with swift, merciless contempt, then stepping back behind the shield wall. From her raised perspective, Rassan watched the moment Venthor had planned for draw closer. The Maggotkin regrouped. The banners were raised high and the bells that festooned the shields and helms rang out with discordant chimes. The broken halves of the horde contracted, their fury coalescing in their effort to destroy the Lord Celestant. He was the threat. He had caused the great injury, and he was closing in on the Realm Gate. He was a cure, and the disease rushed to scrape him from the land. Rassan watched the Maggotkin make their fatal error. They thought the anvils of the Heldenhammer had come to take the Realm Gate, and so they moved to block the attempt. They were wrong. This was a war of extermination. The Realm Gate would still be there when the Children of the Bell were no more. A few hundred yards from the portal, Venthor turned Felkreth's charge sharply to the right, thundering to meet an oncoming wave of Rotbringers. The force that had planned to attack the anvils on their flank now met them head-on. A fetid wave broke against a promontory of stone. The Rotbringers faltered, their rush broken. Venthor and the paladins drove deep into their mass and then turned again to counter another wave crashing in from the left. Venthor and his retinues of implacable warriors turned again and again, their movement becoming a spiral. They created a vortex in the battlefield, pulling the devoted of the plague god tighter and tighter. The tolling of the demonic bell came faster, as if it were calling its followers to greater effort. The children responded, turning with all their might and faith to bring an end to Venthor's charge. And so they opened themselves up to the death blow.
"Strike hard, anvils of the Heldenhammer!"
Rassan shouted, and she raised high the banner she carried. Resplendent in tomb black and bone white, its skeleton iconography commemorated death at its most solemn and sacred. It was the state every warrior in the Stormhost knew, more profoundly than any other Stormcast Eternal. From death they had come, and to death they would return, but not, each swore, before destroying every last minion of chaos. As she lifted the banner, Rassan called death down from the skies. They darkened above her, building with the power. Sorcerous energy crackled around her in a fell aura. She held back the blow a few moments longer, while Arvax beside her thrust forwards his warding lantern. Its sacred light gleamed on the black armour of the liberators as they dropped their shield wall and advanced, a line of blades and hammers, into the rear flanks of the Children of the Bell. The same light stabbed into the enemy, sending flames washing over fever-slimed flesh. The Judicators sent another savage volley into the foe, and then divided their forces, moving to the ends of the line created by the Liberators. The line gradually began to curve, its wings closing in on themselves, as they drove the Maggotkin forwards. Rassan unleashed the lightning. It struck with a deafening crack, snapping the knight in two. Bolts of purest silver incinerated entire clusters of the enemy. Blackened bodies fell to the ground, their weapons melted and twisted. With the air sharp with the stench of burned flesh, Rassan joined the march, pressing ahead into its centre, her hammer blazing as she brought it down with merciless precision onto the skulls and into the chests of the foe. She carved her path through the children, heading directly for Venthor. She reached out for the lightning again, and it answered with terrible swiftness and power. It seemed to her that her most lethal power was coming to her more easily than it ever had before. A part of her mind stepped away from the immediate frenzy and worked to observe the wider battle as best it could, always looking for where she was most needed. It noticed the facility with which she brought death to the enemy, and stored questions away to be contemplated later. Rodbringers shouted in confusion. She heard fear, too, in their cries. They were right to be afraid, and they had more than earned a dose of terror. One warlord, thick with tumours and strong with their exultant growth, turned away from leading his followers towards Venthor. His helm was featureless except for a single hole over his right eye and a belled horn curving out to the right. He wielded a colossal double-bladed axe. He wore no armour over his swollen torso, revealing a slavering, tongue-lolling maw in his gut. He hurled himself at Rassan with a roar, and in the last moment before they clashed, as his blank helm reflected the Sigmarite skull of her own, he paused. The movement was slight and brief, but there was no mistaking it for anything other than uncertainty. The Blight King, champion of a parody of life, saw his death coming for him, and it shook him. Then he swung his axe, but he was too late. Rassan slammed her hammer into his gut. The wound flashed blue as she smashed through the maw and the spine behind it. She withdrew the hammer, and the Blight King bent backwards, his body smouldering. Around her, his followers shrieked in dismay, and then another storm of lightning came down, reaching further and further ahead. Rassan marched, and annihilation preceded her. Erlik discovered that there were still gifts to be received in this existence. True gifts, not the poisonous generosity of the Maggotkin. He had suffered an age, he had lost everything, and now he had his reward. He saw the end come for the children of the Bell.
"Rejoice,"
he croaked. It was the only word he could speak, the command Fleiswil had given him over and over during the eternity of his torture. There were no other words he knew, none he could form, even very roughly, that had any meaning for him. This one still did, thanks to the care and insistence of Fleiswil. So he worked his oozing lips and thickened, furry tongue around the syllables. The sound was liquid, barely recognizable to his own ears. No matter. It was his victory, and he revelled in it. He faded in and out of full awareness, falling into the delirium of his fever, resurfacing with acute stabs of pain from the worms eating their way through his body and down again. In and out, on the eternal rhythm of his hissing breath. Every time he had his moment of clarity, he saw how much further the dark warriors had come, and he whisper cried,
"Rejoice!"
Again. The children of the Bell fought hard, the land erupting with their energy like a cauldron of plague. It was as if their foe did not deign to notice their efforts. At the centre of the cauldron, the mounted leader and his warriors drew the Maggotkin in and laid waste to them. Each time Erlik gazed outwards, the outer formations had moved closer. They were not just crushing the children of the bell, they were scraping their foulness from the land. In and out of awareness. In and out. Flyswill was on the platform, shouting his praise to Nurgle and calling forth swarms of insects. He defended the realm gate with the desperate fanaticism that had brought Erlik to his fate. Once, just before Erlik's vision swam with fever again, he managed to shout,
"Rejoice!"
with greater strength, and Flyswill heard him. The sorcerer stared at him with such naked hatred that it conjured a painful racking from his ribcage. It was laughter. And finally, he came to himself again to find the war over. The only sound of illness and flies he could still hear came from his body. The children of the bell were no more. Flyswill lay on the dais beside him, his head crushed. A figure in black armour towered over Erlik. The warrior's helm was a skull, white against night black. It tilted down, looking at him. Its cold iconography embodied the purity of death. A purity he had feared would never be his.
"Rejoice,"
Erlik whispered. Gauntleted hands removed the helm. The woman who regarded him had features hewn from marble and ice. The planes on her face were hard, unforgiving, framed by iron-grey hair, streaked blood-red. Her eyes were dark, cold as an empty tomb. What Erlik needed from her was mercy. He did not think that was a quality she had in abundance. He pleaded with her all the same.
"Rejoice,"
he said, desperate. Something moved in the sky, drawing his attention. He looked past the warrior's shoulder at the suggestion of sinuous flight. The object was too far and his eyes too dim for him to make it out. Though it was distant, it filled the sky and his heart with the force of its presence. Something was coming. Someone was coming. And Erlik feared the vision of death that would arrive. The dark warrior before him did not seem open to entreaty. But the being in the sky threatened the end of all mercy. Erlik turned his gaze back to the warrior.
"Rejoice,"
he begged. The promise of a true end, of a clean end, of precious oblivion was so close. He could not bear for it to be snatched away.
"Rejoice."
Viscous tears ran down his cheeks. The warrior understood. She nodded, a glint of what might have been pity in those cold eyes. She raised her hammer. "Rejoice," she commanded Erlik. As the hammer swung towards his face, he did rejoice, believing in the certainty of peace and of escape from a darker fate. Neferata guided Nagadron in slow circles around the battlefield. She watched as the anvils of the Heldenhammer finished off the Children of the Bell and secured the Realm Gate. A contingent of guards remained with the portal while the rest of the Strike Chamber moved to the walls of the broken city. She wondered if they were hoping for survivors. Do they permit themselves that kind of illusion? No, not these warriors of Sigmar. These ones know death too well for that. She waited while the Stormcast Eternals took possession of Shadowvale. She assumed she had been spotted and made sure of it by dropping slowly, then pausing, clearly visible. She continued to circle, doing nothing that might be interpreted as an attack. When she saw that the anvils were patrolling the ramparts and that the consolidation of their position had properly begun, she whispered to Nagadron, and began her final descent. The Dread Abyssal's graceful, steady drop was the signal to the small escort that had marched from Neferatia under the path of her flight. From the base of the Stonepane Mountains, close enough to be visible, but far enough away to present no threat, the dead began a fanfare, announcing the arrival of their queen. Skeletal arms beat heavy drums of leathered human skin. Wraiths and banshees cried out, a chorus of dark praise. The music of blood and mourning washed over the plain, its strength rising and falling before the gates of Shadowvale as it was caught by the wind, then dropping into sudden silence as Nagadron landed. Neferata dismounted. She left her weapons fixed to the battle throne on Nagadron's back and removed the helm of Lamia. Though she was armoured, she made her peaceful intentions clear. She walked a few yards towards the main gate of Shadowvale and then stopped.
Come forth. Let the siege begin.
The walls of Shadowvale looked as if they had been gnawed by the jaws of an immense plague-ridden beast. Huge gaps and mounds of rubble broke up the lines of defence. Slimy, moss-covered crenellations rounded and pitted like rotten teeth. Vines bulging with tumorous growths clung to the face of the walls. The anvils of the Heldenhammer had begun the process of burning away the diseased growths, but the stain of the children's occupation would linger for a long time. A stench, like corpses revealed by low tide, hung in the air and clung to skin.
This is good work.
When she had last been here, the battlements had been strong, the city's banners flying proudly. The fortress and its guardians had repelled another assault by the forces of chaos, and triumph had been in the air. Triumph and also pride. It was pride that had led to punishment. Untempered pride that did not recognise the fact that the greatest part of the Chaos Hordes had hurled themselves against Neferatia. If not for the Realm Gate, Shadowvale would have had no strategic importance at all. Neferata had been willing, for a time, to ignore Shadowvale. The insult of its pride had changed her mind. Shadowvale had invited punishment, and in so doing had made itself useful. Neferata had required bait for the Stormcast Eternals, and Shadowvale was perfectly suited for that role. So she had engineered its fall. It was very likely that she would have done so regardless of the city's sins. The presence of the Realm Gate and Shadowvale's proximity to the Stonepanes made it perfectly suited to her design. The act of punishment, though, intensified the pleasure in the destruction. She tasted the delicacy of that pleasure again as she contemplated the ruined walls. The Children of the Bell had been wrong to celebrate taking the city. They had done so because Neferata had willed it. They, too, had been her tools. They had been the means to reaching this moment. Neferata had seen to it that Shadowvale suffered, and now she had her reward. The Stormcast Eternals had come. The rusted gates still clung to their frames. They parted with a shriek as the Lord Celestant of the Strike Chamber emerged, flanked by the Lord Relictor, Lord Castellant, and Lord Veritant. The four commanders stopped a formal 5 yards away. While the Lord Castellant announced their names with an icy formality, Lord Celestant Venthor watched Neferata in silence. His face was rigid, expressionless, his eyes unblinking, his hatred as clear as it was expected. His hair was short and lay flat on his scalp. His nose was long, aquiline, and his bearing would have seemed imperious, except that he was standing straight against the heavy weight of war and command. He would not be easy prey. That made the challenge more enticing. Lord Castellant Arvax was more difficult to read. He looked older than Venthor, though Neferata had learned enough about the Stormcast Eternals to know that meant nothing. They were all both ancient and newly born. Lord Veritant Hyrea made no attempt to conceal her hostility, her anger closer to the surface than Venthor's. It was Lord Relictor Rasan, though, who caught Neferata's attention. Like Arvax, she seemed guarded and was looking at Neferata with a cold curiosity. There was something about her face that nagged at Neferata, but then Venthor spoke and Neferata put aside other concerns. It was time to focus on the intricate dance she was now to perform.
"You know of us," Venthor said, "and we know what you are. What we do not know is why you are here."
Neferata smiled graciously to show that Venthor's disrespect had no effect on her. "I have come to congratulate you on your victory and to welcome you to this region of Shaiish."
"Lies!"
Hyrea spat.
"Not at all. I will ensnare you with truth."
Neferata bowed her head slightly, acknowledging the justice of Hyrea's suspicion. "I cannot blame you for not trusting me."
"You cannot blame us," Venthor snarled. "Nagash betrayed our storm host, abandoned our comrades to their doom, and everywhere we are at war with his legions. You cannot blame us? You insult us with mockery."
"Your order was betrayed," Neferata said, "but not by me. You know this to be the truth." There was a slight hesitation before Venthor answered, and his eyes narrowed almost imperceptibly. Clearly he had not expected her to agree so completely about the betrayal.
"Are you trying to make us believe you do not serve Nagash?"
"Of course I serve Nagash.
You would be a fool to believe I do not, and I would be the greater fool to try to convince you of such a thing."
"You serve Nagash, yet you claim to welcome us,"
said Rasan. "Your position is contradictory."
"Yes. Surely you are not going to claim that there are no such things as contradictory truths?"
Rasan did not answer, but she looked interested. Venthor, though, was merely irritated.
"I am not interested in your paradoxes," he said.
"You should be," Neferata said.
"They are more enlightening and trustworthy than simplicities."
"How can I serve Nagash and not be waging war on you?" "Because the Lord of Undeath has commanded me to be a true ally to you."
She laughed, a silver bell tinkling with amusement and dark suggestion. The Stormcast Eternals stared at her, their puzzlement even greater.
"Can you feel the web of truth? It is wrapping around you, drawing you closer, choking off your means of retreat. Its strands are more unbreakable than lies. Truth has the power to hold you captive forever."
"Why would Nagash give such a command?" said Hyrea. "And why would you tell us this?"
"Am I not obeying his orders by revealing them to you? Am I not proving myself trustworthy to you, and so furthering his ends? What those ends may be is hidden from me as it is from you. All we have is the certainty of the present moment."
She laughed again, sharing with them the joke of the word certainty.
"And so we are bound to use it best to fulfill our duties. Surely this much is clear."
"It is not," said Venthor.
"Really?"
Neferata raised her eyebrows in gentle surprise.
"You have taken Shadowfell and its realm gate. Well done. The work of a knight, the work of a beginning. Is this why you have come to Shaiish, to this particular spot? Are you saying that you have no interest in what lies beyond those mountains?"
She gestured behind her and looked back for a moment at the stone panes. In the pre-dawn, the clouds above Angaria pulsed a dull red, as though reflecting the cauldron of the Empire. Venthor was silent.
Neferata waved her question away. Let it fall to me to be frank, since it is in my interest to be. I know where you will turn next. If you are here, it is because you will march on Angaria. Nagash and Sigmar are at war, but the gods of chaos are not idle. What Graunos has fashioned must be stopped. You know this, and so do I. Can we perhaps see the wisdom of Nagash in this? This is why I am not at war with you. We have an enemy in common.
We have nothing in common, said Venthor.
I think you are wrong.
Our plans concerning Angaria are none of your concern, and we will not be made the tools of your ambition.
So you think.
You would maintain that a divided campaign is better than a united one?
Better than one serving your purpose alone, Venthor growled. You will do as you see fit in your struggle against Graunos. It is no concern of ours. We have no designs on Neferatia. I offer nothing more than that.
Neferata cocked her head. Nothing more? She smiled again. I am disappointed, but I cannot blame you. She smiled more broadly as Venthor's brow turned thunderous. I shall go then, but I do believe we will speak again. I have extended the hand of friendship. I do not withdraw it. I shall hope that you will change your mind.
She bowed to the anvils of the Heldenhammer and walked back to Nagadron. Neferata looked back at the four leaders once more after she was mounted. She focused on Rassan again. There was pride in her bearing, like Venthor's, but her nobility seemed more pained than his. She had unusually large, dark eyes, made cold by endless war. Her skin was stretched tight, the bones of her skull very close to the surface. Neferata was convinced she had seen those features somewhere before. She must learn where. Rassan was watching her, still with more interest than outright hostility. There was something Neferata could use here, if only she could uncover what it was.
At her touch, Nagadron leapt into the air. We return to Nulamia, Neferata said to the Adavor. We have a mystery to pierce. First, though, she had one more task to complete in the region of Shadowvale.
She guided Nagadron on a low flight away from the walls of the city. As they neared the realm gate, she turned her witch sight on the pillars. A spirit, newly released from its tormented mortal flesh, turned around and around the portal, uncertain about its new liberty.
Hello, Erlik, Neferata murmured. Do you think your penance is at an end?
Erlik had been the one most responsible for Shadowvale's triumphs against Chaos. His, then, was the greatest punishment, and no one other than Neferata decided when the term of his suffering would end. Do you see your prey? She said to Nagadron. The dread abyssal rumbled in eagerness.
Then take him.
Nagadron's jaws gaped as he streaked through the air towards the realm gate. The anvils of the Heldenhammer guarding the portal braced for an attack. But Nagadron did not descend any lower. He roared, and the sound threatened to turn dawn back into night. In the realm of the spirits, the cry was even more terrible. It was the thunder of doom and a summons that could not be defied. The grounds before Shadowvale were crowded with the dead of wars beneath the surface. But Nagadron had roared for only one of them. The spectre of Erlik shrieked in fear as it shot up towards Nagadron's maw. Its scream and its flight were invisible to the Stormcast Eternals, and a spectacle of delight for Neferata. The shriek was unending and desperate, the conscious remains of Erlik seeing a new world of torment opening up. Nagadron snapped his jaws shut, consuming the howling ghost, adding Erlik to the horde of the damned who illuminated the monster's ribcage with the eerie green glow of agony.
Well done, Neferata said. Well done. She and Nagadron flew off to the northwest. Her great work was well begun. Rassan watched the Mortark of Blood's mount swoop towards the realm gate, shake the dawn with its roar, and then soar up into the distance. She turned to Venthor. He had been watching too. His cheek muscle twitched as his jaw worked in anger.
I'll give her this, Venthor said through clenched teeth. She has the confidence that comes with absolute arrogance.
You don't believe anything she said, then? Venthor jerked his head dismissively.
What she said is meaningless. It has no relevance to our efforts.
You did not say if you believed her or not.
Would it not be useful to at least give some thought to her offer?
You jest, said Hyrea.
I do not, Rassan said. Nor do I say we should accept, simply that we should consider our position fully. There was more that she wanted to say, but was too uncertain to articulate. The ease with which she had summoned dread powers in battle, and their strength, gave her pause, though the implications were unformed, shrouded in grey mist.
The matter is closed, said Venthor. There will be no talk of alliances with a known enemy.
He turned and marched back towards the gate of the empty city. Hyrea followed close behind. Rassan hesitated. She exchanged a look with Arvax. The Lord Castellant kept his peace, and his expression gave little away. He did, though, glance at Venthor, then back at Rassan for a moment. The acknowledgement was slight. It was also real. He shared her concern. Venthor was a great tempest on the battlefield. Off it, he was calm, always rigorous in examining potential strategies from the broadest perspective before committing to them. This did not make him indecisive. It meant that when he led his troops to war, he did so knowing the full consequences of the choices he had made. He seemed different now. Since arriving in Shaish, his anger had been close to the surface, and the encounter with Neferata had made it burst into the open. Rassan understood his resentment. She shared it. This was the realm of great betrayals. Even so, she had never known him to make a decision in the heat of anger before. As she and Arvax followed Venthor back into Shadowvale, Rassan thought about the Empire beyond the mountains, and of Neferata's insinuating smile. The danger of a wrong decision loomed, its shadow long. It troubled Rassan to find herself wondering if Venthor had already chosen to walk into the shadow. Give your enemies exactly what they think they want. Neferata, the uses of weakness. Chapter 3. In the Palace of Seven Vultures, Neferata convened her council of war. Vampire lords, spy mistresses, white kings, and the captains of the Blood Knights and the Black Knights gathered in the Scorpion Hall. The echoing domed chamber was dominated by colossal statues of scorpions. There were four of them, rearing up from the far walls. Their pincers met beneath the centre of the dome, 100 feet in the air, to hold a monolithic gold and granite sculpture of the Crown of Lamia. The hall was an inverted amphitheatre. The floor on all sides sloped upwards to the centre, where, on a wide platform, ornate tables of bronzed bone held maps of Neferatia and Angaria. Though the platform was large, there wasn't room for all of Neferata's commanding officers, not when they were all present for a campaign of this scale. An empire was going to war. The lords and ladies of war took their turns on the platform as Neferata called upon them. They advanced to give counsel and to receive their orders. The anvils of the Heldenhammer are in the field, Neferata announced. They do not fight at our side. Not yet. She smiled. Their presence, however, already shifts the balance in our favour. Graunos must look to the south. He cannot afford to ignore them.
Our spies in Angaria confirm this, said Merineth. Graunos sends forces with haste to his southern borders, and with even greater haste to the west.
He sees the danger,
said Arlok of the Black Knights, his spectral voice issuing hollowly from his fleshless jaws.
He does, Neferata agreed. He is so very cautious in his wrath.
As much as Lord Celestant Venthor seems wrathful in his caution.
Clearly he is determined not to attack until he is ready, and seeks to anticipate our moves against him.
He would appear to know us well,
said Shavasta, captain of the Blood Knights.
He does, said Merineth. More than any champion of chaos we have encountered.
How can he?
Lord Eventek asked.
We have not fought him before.
One of the lords of Khorne pledged to him is named Kathag, said Merineth.
And he knows me, said Neferata. She too had wondered about the degree of Graunos's perception and care. It was only recently that Velatza had discovered that Kathag had been part of Lord Ruhok's attack on Nulamia, and that he had survived.
Graunos listens to a counselor, said Eventek. That is unusual for the creatures of the Skull God.
Graunos has made Angaria much more than a multitude of hordes, Merineth explained. The picture our spies have painted for us is disturbingly complex. He has created a great machine of war. It is in the service of chaos, and every subject, worshipper or not, is a slave to Graunos's will. If a kind of order is necessary for the grander design he is offering to his god, then he will use it.
He is still a demon prince of Khorne, said Neferata. I will see that this is his undoing. Graunos is wrathful, and so he rushes to prepare. He knows his time is short. He doesn't know how short. Let us then consider how our forces stand.
A growing stalemate, said Merineth.
Her words were greeted by nods around the platform and frustrated murmurs in the rest of the hall.
As quickly as we consolidate our strength, so does Graunos.
He sees what we do, said Shavasta. He has eyes on this side of the mountains.
Of course he does, said Neferata. We could never assemble so great an army in secret.
We cannot control what he sees.
I will control how he interprets it. At present, then, we are in a race neither can win. We both seek the upper hand before invading, and the greatest part of our work is dedicated to what is, in the end, a futile effort.
This is the stage for my performance, and Graunos will be our audience. I will show him what he desires and what he fears. He will act. He will attack prematurely, on my grounds and on my terms. Neferata turned to Shavasta.
Are the preparations at Nighthall Pass complete?
They are, my queen. We await your command.
Then you have it. Raise the curtain.
Nighthall Pass cut through the center of the western arm of the stone panes. From either side of the mountains, it appeared to be a narrow, jagged crack running from the base to the peak of Mount Rankyar, as if a massive blow had split the mountain in two. The passage was a tight zigzag between sheer cliff faces thousands of feet high. An army that ventured into Nighthall Pass would not be able to see more than 100 yards ahead or behind. The pass was an invitation to ambush, but it was also one of the few western points where it was possible for a large force to reach the other side of the mountains relatively quickly. Graunos had no choice but to concentrate on the pass. At the Angarian entrance to the passage, the massive war horde of the Brass Scythe had gathered, led by Lord Javasak. The cornate build-up was, Captain Shavasta reflected, precisely as Neferata had predicted. So the time was coming for Nighthall Keep to play its part. The fortress guarded the pass at its widest point, midway through the mountains. Shavasta was looking at it now as she and her company of blood knights worked their way along the narrow ledge that led towards the base of the keep. The keep was a squat, round tower built into the north side of the pass, 200 feet above the rocky floor. A semicircle of stonework emerged from the cliff as if the mountain were giving birth to the keep. The walls leaned outwards, each row of arrow loops looking further out above the pass than the one below. The roof jutted out further yet. Ballista and funnels for molten and boiling attacks were mounted between the crenellations. Any enemy force that passed beneath the gaze of the unsleeping sentinels of Nighthall Keep would suffer annihilation from an unreachable height above. Inside the keep, a great company of skeletons kept eternal watch, ready, if the enemy proved stubborn, to descend the hidden flights of steps inside the mountain and emerge from staggered exits into the pass. Other than those narrow staircases, whose lower doors were locked fast and invisible from the floor of the pass, the only approach to the keep was Shavasta's ledge. It was barely the width of two hands, and came at the keep from the west. There was no ledge at all to the east. The sole treacherous path was accessible only from Neferatia. Graunos had to guard against the pass because the keep denied any crossing from the east and protected an advance from the west, and it could not be taken except through the most extreme, costly effort, or by treachery. Shavasta held up a fist, calling a halt less than 50 yards from the base of the keep. The ledge narrowed ahead, curving around a bulge in the cliff face. Her blood knights were hidden from the guardians of the keep. Once they rounded the turn, they would be exposed and the attack would begin. It pained Shavasta to take this action. Nighthall Keep had protected Neferatia long and faithfully. Though she understood the strategy, she felt as if she were about to betray Queen and Empire and leave both exposed to the demon prince of Angaria. And she was. Yet this was what Neferata had decreed. The attack must be real. The treachery must be real, or the tactic would fail.
What was built can be destroyed,
Shavasta told herself.
What is destroyed can be rebuilt.
She cut the air with her sword, a silent command, and ran forwards. She sprinted around the lethal curve as sure-footed as if she were charging across a plain. Her troops followed. The arrows that rained down could not slow them, nor could the barred iron door to the fortress. A few minutes later, Nighthall Keep began to burn.
Impossible, said Lord Javasak. This is a trick to draw us in.
The messenger kneeling before him remained silent, knowing better than to answer while Javasak paced back and forth. His heavy boots struck sparks from the stones on the ground. His crimson cloak flapped with the violence of his movements. He glared at the entrance to Nighthall Pass, a crack of deeper darkness in the mountains ahead. Behind him, the vastness of the brass scythe spread out over the foothills. Tens of thousands strong, it rumbled with the sound of drums and the snarls of its warriors. At length, Javasak stopped pacing. He held back his anger and thought about what he had heard. While he pondered, his fingers traced the shape of the twisted spike embedded in the flesh on the right side of his skull. It ran from his chin to his crown, the ribbed brass twisting skin and muscle, pulling his face into a perpetual snarl of rage. It stabbed out of his forehead, forking into piercing horns. Javasak turned back to the messenger.
Tell me again. Our spies witnessed more than just a fire.
Yes, mighty lord,
the blood warrior said. His frame quivered with the effort to keep still. He needed to be on the battlefield, harvesting skulls for the blood god. So did Javasak. But the war was delayed, and delayed, and delayed, the armies endlessly growing, endlessly stalled before the mountains. Javasak and his gore-chosen inner circle were keeping the bloodbound from turning on each other
as the waiting stretched on. Battle arenas where the warriors could kill each other in limited fashion kept the Horde from turning into a riot leagues across. But the situation could not last forever. Now the word had come that the wait might be over, and Javasak did not trust it. Graunos had warned the lords of his armies of the deceptions practiced by the Mortark of Blood, deceptions Kafag had witnessed. Javasak had no intention of sharing Ruhok's fate. Yet he wanted to believe in the news from the pass. He wanted to believe the time had come to flood Neferatia with blood.
"Our spies witnessed battle,"
the Blood Warrior continued.
"Vampires against skeletons, and they have seen the tower begin to fall."
Javasak tightened his fists. With a supreme effort of will, he bit back the order to march into Nighthall Pass immediately. The grip of fear that chained him to Graunos's will enforced discipline, and he passed the terror in turn down the ranks, teaching his warriors to dread him as much as he dreaded Graunos. Ahead of the main body of the Bloodbound Horde, where the land rose into the first of the mountain's slopes, was a steep-sided depression in the rock. Harpies swooped in and out of the bowl, shrieking with hunger and delight as they toyed with the prisoners inside. As Javasak looked their way, one of them hovered just above the pit, her dark, leathery wings flapping to hold her in place. Her taloned feet gripped a soft, dripping mass that might once have been human.
"Send word of what we have seen to Prince Graunos,"
Javasak said. The harpies were slaves to Graunos even more than he was, and the sport of slaughter kept them satisfied while they acted as messengers, streaking through the air back and forth between the western foothills and Skulldagger Bastion.
"We must await his word."
He swallowed bile, hating that he was so constrained, fearing Graunos's anger and wary of Neferata's deceptions.
"But we make ready to march,"
he added. If Graunos gave the command to seize this opportunity, then the order would find Javasak at the entrance of the pass, ready to burn Neferatia with wrath. Tireless, relentless, the harpy streaked to Mausolea, crossing lands that were barren, lands that smouldered after the passage of the warhordes, and lands that were fertile, spared destruction in order to feed the hunger of Graunos's armies. She flew to the offertory throne room, and in shrieking, hissing tones, delivered Javasak's message. Graunos jerked his head, and the harpy flew out of the chamber to perch on its roof and await the commands of her master, while he summoned Kathag to his presence.
"It's a trap,"
said Kathag, standing before Graunos on his throne.
"Tell me where the trap lies,"
said the demon prince.
"A key defense of Neferatia falls. The way is open to us, and the forces of death are seen to be fighting each other. There have been uprisings against the Mortark of Blood in the past. We have applied pressure, and now the cracks appear. Is all of this impossible?"
"It is because it is so believable that it must be a trap. I cannot see how the loss of Nighthall Keep redounds to Neferata's advantage. But it must, or she would not have arranged for it to fall."
Graunos cocked his head.
"Is there any circumstance of apparent advantage that you would not consider a trap?"
Kathag's lips pulled back in a silent snarl at the insult. He said nothing.
"When, I wonder,"
Graunos continued,
"would you ever give the command to attack?"
"I did not say I would not attack now,"
Kathag growled.
"Word play,"
said Graunos, contemptuous.
"Attack," Kathag said. "This is a trap, but we must attack. This is the chance we have sought."
Bored of taunting Kathag, Graunos nodded.
"It is,"
he said.
"And I agree with you. This is a trap. It is also her mistake. If she knew everything that we know, she would not give us this chance. She has revealed her ignorance. So we will strike."
with our full force?
Kathag sounded wary.
No.
Graunos hungered to see the Mortark's empire crushed beneath the boots of his armies. He also would not commit his full might yet. If Neferata was blind to what he was about to unleash, he also acknowledged that there were risks he could not see. Ruhok had trusted his strength too much, and had seen what he wanted to see. Graunos knew better. The opportunity Neferata had created for him was a rich one. Believing a single blow could end the war, though, was a delusion.
Javasek is to take the pass and bring the battle to Neferatia.
A strong probing attack was a risk worth taking.
The rest of the warhordes will wait and prepare for a counterattack.
What of Vask?
He will hear my voice. He will know his opportunity has come.
A monster roared in Nighthall Pass. The beast was a multitude, and the multitude was a unity. Tens of thousands of voices fused into a single bellow of rage. Tens of thousands of boots tramped with the force of an earthquake. And tens of thousands of blades clashed against shields, sounding the thunder of the end of days. Javasak's warhorde advanced through the pass like a serpent of blood and brass. Blood warriors smashed each other against the cliff walls in the crush to be at the front. No flow of lava was as dense, as implacable, or as incandescent. Mounted on his juggernaut, Daurax, Javasak charged through the pass at the head of his warhorde. He exulted in the rage. His jaws were parted painfully wide, as if he would bite down on the entire empire on the other side of the pass. There was satisfaction in the march, but even so, it was a delay. Neferatia was not burning yet. His axe had not yet severed the queen's head from her shoulders. Far behind, the siege towers were being dragged painfully through the narrow confines of the pass. Every sharp turn required hours of straining from the Brayherds on the ropes to negotiate. The rest of the warhorde would long have left Nighthall Pass by the time the siege towers reached the Neferatian side. Javasak was beyond caring. He would strike with speed, with a swarm, with fire. In the rush of the march, it was easy to believe that any walls he encountered would fall before the sheer force of the charge. The brass scythe would smash the cities of Neferatia down like a wave breaking over sand. Up ahead, and far above, the struggle for Nighthall Keep continued. What remained of the tower was burning furiously. As Javasak passed beneath the fire, the fortress that had barred his way for so long was a blazing torch. It lit the way forwards, filling the pass with a dull, flickering red. It presaged the massacres to come. The mountain rumbled, and more of the shattered tower collapsed. Huge chunks of brickwork tumbled down, bouncing off ridges in the cliff faces, disintegrating and hailing rubble into the pass. Javasak heard cries suddenly cut short as fragments of the keep crushed blood reavers behind him. The losses barely registered. They were trivial, meaningless. The brass scythe was surging past the point where the advance would have slammed to a halt only the day before. Javasak urged Daurax faster, and he left the ruin of Nighthall Keep behind him. He roared in triumph. The way forwards was clear. Let the foe try to slow him down with ambushes. They would be futile. The fortress on its perch had been uniquely situated to deny any attempt to force the way through the constricted pass. Now the enemy faced the same claustrophobic confines as the brass scythe. But Javasak's horde had the momentum. He would grind the defenders of Neferatia to bloody muck beneath Daurax's hooves. He welcomed their attempt. He lusted for the welter of slaughter. It could not come soon enough. The slaughter made him wait. No one tried to stop the brass scythe. The light from the burning fortress faded to the rear. Soon there was only the grinding thunder of the great charge. The pass twisted ahead. It widened slightly, then narrowed again, and turned again, denying Javasak any sense of how far there was still to go. It had taken 2 days at a forced march to reach Nighthall Keep. He lost track of time now as the triumphant fury of the long-anticipated attack took hold of him. He was vaguely aware of the gloom lessening with the coming of day, and then growing dark again. He was tireless. He was relentless. He drove himself and his warriors as if each bend of the pass were the last one, and they were forever about to fall upon the foe. And at last, as night gave way again to a day sullen as lead, the next bend was the last one. Daurax thundered out of the pass and down the rocky slope beyond. Neferatia opened up before Javasak, an empire waiting for his axe. The land ahead descended in low rolls from the mountains. It was a waste of low scrub and hard rocky ground. Isolated trees, their growths twisted by the unceasing north wind, stretched out, gnarled, grasping branches like entreating hands. Standing stones were scattered around the landscape as if strewn by an uncaring hand. Alone or in small clusters, covered in moss, they were half sunken into the earth, slowly being drawn down by erosion and time. Gravestones, leaning and weathered, poked up from the ground. They were even more widely dispersed than the monoliths, and some were barely visible. But their slumped forms jutted up in every direction, for as far as Javasak could see. They seemed